19 minutes past 8. Welcome back to Sabah al Muslim on Radio Islam International. Joining us now on the line, we have Brother Zeeshan Zafar, who is part of the Marrakesh Declaration. I explained to you that this conference took place in Morocco between the 25th and 27th of January. The theme there was the rights of religious minorities in predominantly Muslim majority communities. Representatives of over 120 countries were there. Brother Zeeshan, Jazakumullah for your time. Much appreciated. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And welcome to Radio Islam.
Wa alaikum assalam. Suleiman Rabat. Pleasure to be on Radio Islam. After many years, I've been having conversations with Idris Hamid, a dear friend of mine in South Africa, so it's an honor to be on your show.
Likewise. Give us a bit of the history. How did the Marrakesh Declaration come about?
We'd have to go back to June 2012, which is quite surprising. This is not something that has come overnight. But it all started with a meeting that was held in Mauritania, a country in West Africa, where we were trying to launch the Global Center for Renewal and Guidance, which was one of the initiatives led by Sheikh Abdullah bin Bir. Now, at this particular meeting, which included ministers of religion from Mauritania, Morocco, Tunisia, as well as various religious scholars and muftis, a question was raised by one of the delegates there. And it was about the proposal of a jizya being implemented in Egypt for non-Muslim subjects. So the jizya, for our viewers who are not aware of it, is the per capita yearly tax that's given to non-Muslim subjects. So Sheikh Abdullah bin Bayer, on hearing this, he said that this was completely unacceptable in the context that we live in. So we need to really do a more deeper study and reevaluate this. So it was agreed upon at that meeting that the Tunisians would hold a workshop to look at a more deeper understanding with Sheikh Abdullah bin Bir on the rights of minorities and citizenship, as well as an agreement that a final conference would be held in Morocco, which is the event that has just surpassed. So and I think it's important to understand, Suleiman, that based on what we've seen in recent years and the significance and importance of the brutal atrocities that are happening to minorities in Muslim countries, the enslavement, murder, intimidation, mass migration, this conference was, you know, it became even more meaningful and more paramount to hold.
Now, how many people attended the conference approximately, and how many from those who attended were the signatories of the declaration, and from which parts of the world?
So in total, we had over 300 people that attended the conference. So we had a very select group of muftis and religious scholars, religious leaders. This also included the minister of religion of every Muslim majority country. And out of that, you know, we had probably around about 100, I'd say nearly 100 countries that were represented, as well as multi-religious faith leaders and other organizations with interests in freedom of religion. Out of that, in terms of the signatory list, I think we're sitting at around about over 200 individuals who signed for it. We have a further 80 to 100 individuals who came as witnesses to it, you know, in terms of viewing the actual proceedings of the declaration. So that's representatives from various multi-faith communities.
Take us through some of the main points mentioned in the declaration.
Sure. So basically, the declaration was really a reaffirmation and a commitment to the principles of the Charter of Medina. And it contains, and the Charter of Medina contains a lot of principles based for constitutional contractual citizenship. So some of these examples are things such as the freedom of movement, property ownership in the country that you are born in or live in, mutual solidarity, justice and equality. So the goal being here is that these declaration points would be utilized as a framework for national constitutions. And I guess in terms of the essence of the main points of the declaration, it's really to try to bridge the gap between the rulings, the ahkam of fiqh, which is jurisprudence, to a level where the concept of citizenship in Islam matches what we see in the West today, and that's especially in relation to human rights and international law. So what we're trying to really prove is that, you know, the objectives of the Sharia, you know, are in harmony with what we see today in terms of the human rights and international law.
Now, has the declaration borrowed from the Khulafa of the past who showed tolerance to other religions like Umar radiallahu anhu and the famous example in the conquest of Jerusalem?
Yeah, that's a very good point, Suleiman. What we see there in terms of the Khulafa and the various other movements that happen afterwards is more so epitomizes the spirit and the embodiment of the values that the Prophet Muhammad encouraged when looking at the values of peace. But this declaration is really, again, based on a document that was composed by the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that governed relations between Muslims and other religions, which is known in the English language as the Charter of Medina. So it's interesting to know that the Prophet, when he came into Medina, it was a multi-ethnic and multi-religious society, and it was neither founded on a conquest or a peaceful surrender. So this, again, this constitution really established the contractual citizenship of those under the authority, where everyone was under one cohesive unity, where citizens enjoyed equal rights. So it's really based on this Medina Charter more than anything else.
Now, this declaration, is it just a summary of the concluding thoughts, or does it have any kind of effect? Does it in any way come into effect?
Yeah, sure. It's January the 27th was the date that it was issued, and the next task is really the big task that we have. So it's all good and well that we, you know, issue declarations, but what comes next? Within the actual declaration, you'll see an action plan, and we will soon be publishing a more further detailed action plan, which is really looking at the obligation that organizations like ourselves and the individuals that attended the conference are able to meet with their respective governments and in their respective countries. And also included into that discussion, we were looking at getting ministers of justices, muftis and scholars within each of these countries, where serious steps can be taken both politically and legally, so we can establish a constitutional contractual relationship between its citizens. So we're engendering that whole spirit of tolerance, harmony and love. So it's going to be, there's quite a lot of work to do ahead of us, including educating leaders, political leaders. The Medina Constitution or the Charter, it's a religious piece of work. So it requires our religious scholars to really elucidate and understand how it relates to our modern day conditions. And beyond that, I guess, within the actual declaration, looks at, you know, how we need to start, you know, reappraising and reevaluating the current educational systems that, or curriculums that we have in the Muslim world, to understand what is the spirit of, you know, freedom of religion and, you know, plurality.
Finally, Brother Zishan, there are those who would ask the question that isn't it time that the Western world also started to, on a more regular basis, adopt something similar, since we see such a rise in Islamophobia in the Western world?
Yeah, that's a very important point. And, I'm going to refer to a point, and I asked this very same question to Sheikh Abdullah bin Baer some time ago, and he used a wonderful analogy, and he uses it in many of his speeches. He says that when your house is on fire and you see a fire that's happening in a neighboring house as well, what would you do immediately? His answer was that, you know, we would immediately look to, you know, put out the fire that's in our own house so that we can save ourselves to save other people. So this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to look at the fires and the conflagration that's happening within the Muslim world and try to really dampen a lot of this exacerbated problem that's existing. However, I'm going to have to draw the listeners' attention to the fact that this declaration really embodies a spirit of, you know, where Muslims and people of all different faiths are positive model citizens, defending and benefiting their country where they reside as citizens, and also respecting the fact that, you know, our fellow other citizens in this world are children, are children of prophets as well. They are children of Bani Adam. They are people of Bani Adam. So we need to work with our wider faith communities to eliminate this hatred. And I think, you know, even the spirit that occurred in the Marrakesh meeting was that we saw almost 80 faith leaders coming together and also affirming their commitment to the fact that we also need to stop the hatred that's existing against Muslims in around the world. So in answer to your question, we are eventually looking at a plan either at the end of 2016 or the start of 2017, where we will also be discussing the issue of Muslims living as minorities in non-Muslim majority countries. So it's definitely on our radar.
Interesting indeed, Brother Zishan. Jazakumullah so much for your time this morning. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much for giving me the time.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. That was Brother Zishan Farooq talking to us from the UK about the Marrakesh Declaration. Basically, this meeting took place in Morocco between the 25th and 27th of January. The rights of religious minorities in predominantly Muslim majority communities was discussed. And here, basically, it was to to show the harmony between the concept of citizenship as understood in the world today and the ahkam of Sharia, and also to show that non-Muslims have rights in Muslim-majority countries, and that they cannot be marginalized, and their property cannot be usurped, and they cannot be treated in a way that's unjust. We are now inching up towards 8:30, when it's time for the latest news headlines.